شو بتقدر تعمل دي بريشوا فاس من البروبلم دي سترايكس انت هو از كلوز تو جو باك ان ساتر فروم ان 1 سو البروبلم ده اي سي وان مانز ميت از ا لوت اوف مانز بويزن هيومن رايتس اند ديموكراسي كاوز ات ا ذا هيومن رايتس Without wasting time now, because we're 20 minutes late, 20 minutes. Because I tried to cover myself, I nearly died. I was driving a car like in 80. I see he's very scared. let's just introduce one another quickly. Although most of us no one another yet, but I don't want to take for granted there are new faces. I don't know people is better than to eat with you the usual way. I'll start from my desk here. Myself, chairperson of the Portfolio Committee in Opanyogo. I won't give you much time to tell you what you know about me, but those who would like to get concerned with me during the break. And then I've got Shanazia, our committee secretary, and I've got my members there who are also going to make their voice, nice voices heard as they introduce them. So I've got my researcher behind there, Renee. There she is, a very beautiful lady behind. She looks like a general. Yeah, okay.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Janita Lawrence, a member of the committee. Thank you.
Good morning. I am Janita Lawrence, member of the committee.
Hi, my name is Peter Smith.
Over to you, Gigi.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Good morning. Welcome. I'm sure you weren't drunk and you were wearing safety belts. good morning, honourable members. My name is Thomas Alterheide. I'm Deputy Director General in the Department of Science and Technology.
Yona Teresi, Chief Director in the Department.
Good morning, colleagues. My name is Tom Sigmundson, also from the Department of Science and Technology.
Honourable Chair and members, I'm Martin Mulcahy, Special Advisor to the
Minister. Okay, also you at the back there, you also introduce yourselves.
Andre Meiberg, lawyer with an interest in...
Here's a micro because everything is recorded here.
Andre Meiberg, lawyer with interest in Indigenous property rights.
Hi, I'm Megumi Tsutsui with Legal Resources Center.
Good morning, Alex Tarr from Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning, Andrew Kaniki from the National Research Foundation.
Good morning, Jacob Mashlangu, also from the National Research Foundation.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you for the invitation for the Department to present to you an overview of IKS activities, as well as a progress report on the sui generis legislation that is currently being considered within the Department. As you know, Honourable Chair, this is a matter of great interest to the committee. You've asked several questions on previous occasions around it. It is also a fairly specialised area of activity, so I have taken the liberty to ask my colleagues who are more versed in this particular area to, in fact, make the presentation. So I would like to hand over to Dr. Sileki with your permission.
extensive cover this aspect. We intend to cover these aspects, general alignment with government policy, and looking at the three main directorates is organized around that, on knowledge development and innovation, advocacy and policy development, and then we will also report on the progress report, on the progress made, either to on the sui generis legislation or the consideration thereof. And then we'll conclude by looking at how the Department of Science and Technology programs have been mobilized to work around IKS as a team. The beginning with probably the latest pronouncements on the policy landscape, Vision 2030 has very strong commitments made there to the IKS. So in terms of looking at the role of IKS, it is seen as a long-term commitment within the policy framework. These are probably the current mid-term outcomes to which the IKS activities speak to: a long and healthy life, decent employment, skilled and capable workforce, rural development, and so forth. But there's also a major role which the indigenous knowledge has been allocated to play within the policy landscape at the DSP, and that's in the bioeconomy. How does IKS contribute to the bioeconomy? That is quite an important one. And generally, we are transposing IKS from resource base into a knowledge economy. So we see IKS as playing a critical role in the knowledge economy to which the DSP is committed. This is probably beginning with this directorate. I will look at the three issues: the innovation as it stands within the bioeconomy. Then we'll look at the research and development as around the knowledge generation. And we have started a new activity in that the much of that reports and funding in the bioeconomy goes to institutions of higher learning and science councils. And very little probably at the moment has been trickling down to the communities. So the technology transfer activities speaks to those interests at the grassroots level. Beginning with the bioprospecting and its role in the bioeconomy, in the DSP we have a platform that has evolved over the last few years, probably 4 years, on which is a platform. The task has been, how do we interface IKS into the mainstream activities of the national system of innovation that is emerging? How do we move away from the perception of IKS as mambo jumbo and mainstream it into the various scientific discourses that are happening within the national system of innovation? So by selecting these particular areas of work, we can claim that we are actually at the same level of the cutting edge in the scientific research in these fields of African traditional medicines, in cosmeceuticals and nutraceuticals. So we have taken the best that we can within our national system of innovation and allocated those resources to that. Basically, the stakeholders involves government, private sector, science councils, NGOs, traditional health practitioners, knowledge holders, and academia. So we have a broad range of people that work together. They have constituted themselves into legal consortia through agreements. So it's not an informal kind of arrangement we're talking about. It's legally binding in terms of its activities. We've also decided that probably we should focus on the diseases that are considered to be important and have been put in our national health programs. And this is diabetes, HIV, and TB. There are many other areas, but these are the key drivers that we're working and I'll report on that. Then on the cosmeceuticals, we have skin care, and there's a lot of problem with balding amongst men, and so it's quite something that is very promising coming through there, oral care, and then on the traditional foods. We're not just doing this as an activity, but as a functional food. How do traditional foods help with healthy issues? So it is a functional food that relates to improved quality of life. We'll move quite quickly into the examples. I'll begin with the cosmeceuticals. We had to make a strategic decision. As you know, it takes very long to get African traditional medicines approved through the Medical Control Council. So we had to look at demonstrating the efficacy of IKS in the shortest time possible. So we chose things that will not go through the processes that will delay that, and skin products have lighter control on them. So in this particular one, we have a product where the skin is uneven in tone, but also in the smoothness, and this has been, it has gone through human trial. It's a success story. We are at the level of commercializing. We have brought in commercial companies that we are working with so that we can put this to the market. And the color codes in the bar there indicate the progress that we have made. So it is a completed product ready for marketing. Probably a little more on that. The pipeline, for example, the growing of these materials, the agriculture behind it, all this work has been done by the Agricultural Research Council. So there is the capacity to produce this. The people have been trained in terms of producing the materials for further manufacturing. I must indicate that we're very happy that the Technology Innovation Agency have taken interest in this product. So it's one of the things that is in their portfolio of activities to take further into the market. Then there is the Antrico. This speaks to all of us who are probably aging. The work that has been done is we're still in the process of completing the human trial, but it's towards the end. And so this product as well, soon we should be, at the end of this financial year, we should be taking it into commercialization. And probably the point to push here is that we want to build the best models for commercialization so that the elements of all South African legislation are taken into consideration, whether it is the bulk prospecting regulations, which require benefit sharing agreements, we take them into consideration. This is quite an effective product. We also are at the same stage, completing the human trials on the antibody. And we move on to the African traditional medicines. There are a number of products that have come through, and the consortium has been tasting them. At the moment, we have moved from laboratory testing into animal testing before we get into the human trials. They are showing quite a lot of promise, and I thought I should share that with you just to see how the effectiveness that is coming through the system. In the first slide, you have generally the commercial products that are used. And the most effective of them all is insulin at the bottom, as you can see. It's most effective because that is an indicator of how much sugar is in the bloodstream. So that was taken then as a control in the second slide. And so it is the top line in that control. And when you look at the products that we have going through the system, the three are actually below that of insulin. So the potential that they are showing for diabetes is great. It is very great. So we are hoping that this will hit the market after the trials have been tested. The plant has been tested in terms of the roots, the bark, and the roots. So it is quite the agricultural work in terms of converting it from a wild plant into something that is cultivatable is also going through the process at the same time. So that if we reach the final end, we're not beginning to do the research as well now to grow it.
Understood very well the control, the black one in the other side, and the control, which is the reddish one, in terms of insulin and effectiveness. What did you say?
In terms of the insulin is used in the first slide to show its effectiveness. The control used was not insulin in the first slide. But then in the second slide, because insulin is the most effective that we know of now, we use that as our control in testing whether the leads that are coming through from the indigenous knowledge holders is anywhere near insulin. And what that has proved is that after it is applied, in the dosages that are indicated, are in the line on the horizontal side, this is the result that it gives in comparison with insulin, which is the control. So the sugar level in the bloodstream is much lower in the other two.
Chair, if I might just add, if you look at the left-hand graph, the black line represents the control where there's no insulin given to reduce the amount of sugar. The red dotted line shows when insulin is present, and you can see there's a reduction in the amount of sugar. On the left-hand axis, you'll see that sugar is plotted across there, with 36 right at the top and 6 at the bottom. So so there's a reduction in sugar when the insulin is present, as one would expect. Going to the right-hand curve, the top line now, which is now called control, is in fact equivalent to the insulin line in the left-hand curve. And the solid red line shows the efficacy of this particular remedy. And you can see that it's even more effective, according to these tests, than insulin is. That's what this is showing.
So presumably, you could have just put those three there on the left-hand slide below the insulin. Mm-hmm. Would be the same thing.
Yeah, then the left-hand scale would have actually elongated.
Yeah.
Thank you. And the similar tests have also been conducted with tuberculosis by the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, and the results are also showing very similar results, except that we thought that it would be too detailed. We just wanted to use one to demonstrate, but it's the similar results that are also being used in the case of tuberculosis. As you can even note that iodine, which is now the current, this product works much better than that. Maybe moving on into the HIV portfolio, there are two items that we want to share with you. One, there's been a lot of talk about the CAPRISA studies and on the microbicide, but we found a similar product as well from indigenous knowledge that is going through, and it's really the team at VIT that are working on this product, and it is also showing anti-HIV transmission. So to this extent, the progress made is that we've done the preclinical and we're now at the preclinical testing, so we still have to go a long way in terms of human trials and the like. The second portfolio on HIV, it is one which combines three indigenous plants to prevent HIV infection. It's been tested for much longer within the community. The traditional healers probably started collecting records in 2004, so there are quite a lot of records that have been taken on observation of this. So we have now taken it up to see in the laboratory what is the effectiveness of this. We have been to this house before on the issues of Ubejan. Now, we are going from that process, that right from the beginning, we have to get proper agreement with the knowledge holders. The transfer of the materials have been done upfront, so the legal aspects of it are in place so that we do not have any stumbling blocks going forward. We can take it through our process, unlike what has happened to Bejani. So this is the probably the portfolio of traditional medicine. I'll quickly move and share on the nutraceuticals, on the food elements. Our aim, of course, is to make South African food global food. Well, how do we make sure that our food also are consumed globally? And so we've intended then to take these processes through scientific investigation, interrogation of what nutrients, what they have, but also what health functions they might perform in the human bodies. And we have gone quite far. With amaranthus, we are almost getting into the commercial side. There are many products that have been developed out of it, and so the Agricultural Research Council, the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research are busy working on this. And there's also a lot of work that is going on with the University of Venda around the vegetables. But the point that we need to stress is that in these three fields, we're trying to see activities that can give results to employment at the grassroots level. Because if communities can grow this, then we can see that we can go forward. We've also been in discussions with the South African Bureau of Standards. How can they assist to take these foods into the market? So we're working towards not only the scientific side of the work, but also trying to see the marketing and bring in other agents that can help us with that. Probably I could quickly move on to say we have spent either two, it's 9 million at the DST around that. This money comes through the different DST programs. The IKS portfolio is not that strong, but the point is that the value that has been placed here is the DST value. And so the contribution comes through seeing the importance of that. Going forward, as you have noticed, we are at the stage where we should be conducting clinical trials. And these are expensive items. But we have to weigh the potential of these remedies and the cost. And we really would like to appeal to this committee when these issues are being raised in the budgeting processes to look at the potential of what this could bring into the country. If we just look at one example, which hasn't gone even this far, such as the pelargonium, the global returns on pelargonium is about 5 billion rand. Now, if this becomes, the diabetes one becomes a mega drug bust globally, you can expect double or triple that return to the country. So I think that when we're making the appeal for support on clinical trials, it's on the basis of work done and the potential that this is holding. I will move on to look at the contribution to the portfolio of the bioeconomy through the research that is funded through the NRF, which this parliament gives a ring-fenced grant year in and year out. And that too, we have moved into the applied research. The two examples given here are tea examples. There is tea from Northwest that is also holding a lot of promise, Moretella Twene, and this is being researched by the MRC here in Cape Town. And then we have the honeybush tea that has also been funded through the NRF research grant, and it has potential for cardiovascular effects, for immunology, provide immune, and also for weight loss. So there are things that refer to our health issues. But the point that we want to demonstrate is that the money that you ring fence is producing practical results that can lead to improved quality of life, increased jobs,
and also skills development. Now, maybe on the skills development, could you just demonstrate here what is coming through, the 19 projects that are funded from the 10 million, and it has been 10 million for over 11 years, so there's need to increase this amount of money. But this is what we're able to produce out of it, 19 projects, and there are 52 postgraduate students attached to these activities. Then there are two, in addition to that portfolio, we have another stream of funding from the DST that goes through the NRF, the research chairs. There are two research chairs in IKS, one at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, where the work on diabetes is being carried on, and one at Walter Sisulu University. And together they have a total of 24 postgraduate students. Then there is an IKS Center of Excellence that is being finalized that will bring five universities together, universities of Limpopo, University of Venda, University of Northwest Mafeking, University of South Africa, and University of KwaZulu-Natal. We hope that it will be completed in this year. Under that program, we have a Bachelor of Indigenous Knowledge System that has been approved by the Department of Higher Education, by the Council on Higher Education, so it is ready for launching. So in February next year, we shall be launching the BIKS at those universities mentioned. I did mention that we have also moved into the looking for how do we speak to actual activities on the ground in the community. Most of this work has been taking place in laboratories and in universities. So we looked at the technology transfer initiative on IKS-based activities. In this particular case, the RISA product has a market and is a high demand for it, but the agricultural practices around it have not been well considered. So the Moringa product, a product development that we've engaged in three communities, in Limpopo, two same communities, in Pretoria, at Ridgeville, and in KZN, in Kwadugusa. So we've been able to train 27 people in farming practices, and we're hoping that soon they'll be taking these items into the market. So involved in it is the skilling and job creation at the grassroots level, and also contributing to good health through better nutrition that is arising out of that. Involved in this, in terms of the scientific work, is the University of Beats and the University of KwaZulu-Natal and the Council for Industrial Research, and then the Agricultural Research Council. So it's a good team of people working on the scientific, but also on the grassroots level of producing that. This completes the profile on the activities that we're evolving, and we thought that maybe we could just share to say that the IKS work has been fully integrated in the bioeconomy strategy of the department, in the agriculture side of it, and in the health side of it, and there could also be possibilities on the industrial side of it in terms of the microbicides and many other things that can lead into this particular work. So the main thing is that it's no longer a standalone activity. It is part of a national strategy on how to take indigenous knowledge into the global knowledge economy. I'd like to move on to the next directorate. This completes that particular work. We thought that with your investment, you need to know where it is going. This is a very important element. All that I have said, if the indigenous knowledge is not collected, stored, managed properly, then this will not result. So we've set up a national record system and also a system to accredit and certify the knowledge holders. Just quickly, this national record system is positioned to be a leading indigenous knowledge systems treasure hub for social and economic development. So it's about collecting, preserving, protecting, and the promotion of indigenous knowledge. And we've been doing this since 2008. At the moment, I can report that
There's only one case that is remaining, but the system is up and running, connected at the University of Zululand. We're just about to connect Muruleng in the northwest and the Vuani in Limpopo. And year, every year, we'll then do it incrementally as we move on. You've got the presentation. These are the objectives that we have set. But maybe what is important is that you can't record indigenous knowledge without establishing social networks. So you have to go into communities using traditional leaders and people within the communities to record. So we don't export people from other communities to go and record the knowledge in those communities. We use people in those communities whom we train and equip, and we put up the infrastructure to assist them in that. Probably this is just illustrative, you've got it on the slide. In terms of the probably the value chain, if you begin bottom at the bottom from the right side, we've had to develop a cataloging system that speaks to indigenous knowledge. As you know, the library information system, a knowledge information system, they will not have a metadata that speaks to IKS. So we've had to develop one that speaks to that. And we are confident that we have reached a sufficient level which it can be used. But also the recording, and after it is recorded, at the village level or community level, they verify. So they call a committee, is this information really true? Before it even leaves the community, it's verified. And then it goes into the quality check. People that are trained in quality at the documentation center, and they will check on the quality, whether this video or the information collected fits in with the metadata. And then at the end of it, we will then look at the scientific verification. We put up a team of botanists and all those and say, is this description right? And so, to a certain extent, this system can operate. It has been developed with the Meraka Institute. But the key element is preservation, promotion, protection, and development. On the development side, this information can now link up with the National System of Innovation. Researchers can tap in this information and research what it is. And it is protected at four levels. The public, they can reach the information. Then the second, you have to get permission to get into the detail. And then if it has commercial purposes, then you can sign benefit sharing agreement. And then there is secret information, which is not supposed to be in the public domain. That is locked up. It's only by special arrangement with the communities that you can access it. That security system has been tested by Meraka Institute. The knowledge holders at the village level can also receive a feedback through SMS. They can interact with that. They can access the information through a cell phone. So we've made it accessible to the people. The final stage that I said we're working on is to make it in other languages. If they enter, can they access it in isiZulu or Sesotho? So we want to have a friendly interface in which they can enter the technical work that we have already described. This is how it is looking at the moment. The information can bring in pictures of people, and if you click on one of them, like here we have Mr. Andres Dromo, the late Mr. Andres Dromo, who was actually a coordinator in collecting this information, and you can see on the right side an aspect of that information. What does it contain? It's about the preparation of a particular food. And then they show you what it has evolved. We are hoping that in so doing, eventually we will have a very thorough database. I will move on to another area. Maybe the issue of databases seems to have come up before within the issue of the DDI amendment deal. And I think that we have a system that is probably the best. We have benchmarked it with India, Venezuela, with WIPO, the World Intellectual Property Rights Organization. So it is a system
that is usable and accessible. This particular one, probably I won't take too much time on it. I'll try and summarize what we're doing. Indigenous knowledge holders don't get their knowledge through going to university. They get it through their training and all that. And if we were to certify them through the a system of education that we have now, they will not qualify. They will be considered to be illiterate. So within that framework of their own knowledge, so we're developing a knowledge in which they themselves can certify. And there are reasons why this is important. If you look at health issues, we need to find out who are the truly trained traditional healers who meet the test. And there are others who are claiming and they don't meet the test. So the quality control needs to begin within that community. So a framework is being set up to set the norms and the standards for themselves. And in so doing, then we can protect the public of any misdoing. So that is the purpose of this. It's not just in traditional medicine. It will be in foods and many other areas of indigenous knowledge domains. We have finished the framework. We're working on norms on two areas, one of traditional medicine and one of governance. And governance means traditional leadership. Exciting stuff is emerging in there. Some of the rationale would be what are the norms by which chiefs must judge whether they are a good chief or not. And so we're working around that. So the way forward is that this particular way will need to be taken through the senior executives and the minister, then we'll go for public consultation in further developing. The last relates to the papers, probably why we are here, is to look about the policy framework and then report on what it is that we have achieved on the sweetness legislation. This particular slide, I also won't spend too much time because 2 weeks ago with my colleague, Dr. Matutu, this issue was raised by this house around public awareness and IKS. So what we have done is to indicate the areas in which we participate. And I'm glad to say that the chairperson of this committee has been a very active promoter and advocate of IKS. He's found himself in most of these activities, IKS expos, whether it is public awareness on intellectual property rights for traditional medicine, it's been part of the processes. We also are involved in the Rand Easter Show, so we participate in promoting IKS, and we have a biannual regional workshop. We can't achieve this without bringing our colleagues in the SADC together. Most of these medicines or knowledge that we have is transborder. How do we work together around that? And then participation and in hosting conferences. We have probably achieved 2 items. Generally, there hasn't been any research ethics pertaining to indigenous knowledge. We have developed research ethics. They've been to the DG, but you want them to be shared with EXCO. So we'll be taking this to EXCO for final approval in terms of the ethics around research. When people go into communities, what is it that is expected of them as researchers? How do we educate the knowledge holders also around the expectation from researchers? So that has been put in place. Now, on the database policy, normally databases are seen as if they are free access for everybody. But we have developed a policy which protects them, which uses them as also as protection. So we have achieved that, and then I should be coming to the reason why we had been called in here. So probably the question that we need to begin is why a sui generis legislation when we've been going through the process of developing the amendments bill. What we note is that there is a robust consensus that indigenous knowledge needs to be protected. But the disagreement has been on how do we protect it? Do we use the existing IP rights system? Do the current IP rights system cover everything that we have?
So in this particular case, we thought that maybe it might be useful to begin on that point. What is it that is lacking, probably in the approach that maybe there? So we thought, let's look at what is covered. First of all, using the existing IP rights system, which has been already been through many portfolio committees, and this portfolio committee has participated in its finalization. But we note that in this particular case, the important element is looking at what has been the focus of the amendment bill. The amendment bill picks on four instruments of IP. There are many other instruments of IP, but it picks on copyright, design, performance protection, and trademarks, and what happens to the other instruments of IP. But also, that particular thrust is economic and commercial. Is indigenous knowledge only about commercial? And we don't think so. So there is a gap that is emerging around that. But also, much of the intellectual property rights, the ones that are chosen in this particular example, speak to the tangible indigenous knowledge. What happens to the intangible? It's not covered in this particular case. So there is another probably question that much of the information too, in terms of the amendment bill, covers the information that's already in the public domain, or that gets to be disclosed in the public domain. Now, what about the information that has not yet been disclosed? And we believe that 80% of the indigenous knowledge is still oral and held by the communities. How do we protect that if we only focus on that which is in the public domain and that which is already tangible and we forget about the intangible? So it is important that as we look at this, we look at not as competing, but rather as complementary, that they assist. It is important, it's essential that the commercial elements are looked at. But equally true, it is important to look at the intangible that gets to be lost by only focusing on the economic. There are moral rights, there are conservation rights that needs to be looked at, and so it is important to look at that. The probably other element that needs to be pushed in is in the management of those rights. So it's another issue that we think that the particular needs of the sui generis would look into those aspects. Probably we've been advised by our seniors, and we're working around that this is a DST initiative. To that extent, the NIPMO, the National Intellectual Management Corporate Rights Office, is involved in this. Our legal department are involved, and other departments. So we're working together to establish a consensus around it. And then that consensus must be taken to our senior executives. We see the way forward that once this consensus has been established, then our senior executives will sit down with their colleagues in the DTI and find an amicable way before we go anywhere else. So, and also before this is considered to be something that can be tabled, there has to be that particular discussion within government. So it is within this context that we thought that we should share the fact that definitely work is progressing, but it's not work that we need to put in the public domain as yet, because there has to be this consensus that must be established within the DST and also with other government departments. We've spoken to this, what's the differences between the two, and I don't think that I will really spend much of your time at this table. Our view is that indigenous knowledge probably needs to be considered as a standalone rather than one that is amended in each one of it. But that if it is a standalone, it will speak to its idiosyncrasies, its distinctions are what it is. We've also defined in this this presentation what the sui generis legislation is, a special kind of legislation, one which goes beyond the conventional system. And So probably this is summarizes what we intend to go and do. So we can't say that these are firm decisions, that this is the way we should go. We say we're building consensus. That consensus must be built within the DSC and also with other government departments. Thereafter, then we should decide which way to go. This is the last slide, just to indicate how we are working within the department. Program one with the legal unit, they are the ones who will be driving this deal. They are the lawyers of the department. And then program two, who have an interest in innovation and management, where NIPMO also is nested, they will also participate in this role. Program three will help us with the international elements, the SADC and the Africa elements in championing that. In program four, that's where the IKS is nested, where the work is going. And then program five, when we talk to its application on the social economic partnerships, they come in. For instance, we spoke about the skin evener. The program five will take that as an incubator project and see how to commercialize it. So we have created a value chain approach within the DSC to work on indigenous knowledge systems. This is why we've achieved as much, because our budget is limited. By leveraging from other programs, we've been able to push this agenda much further. That doesn't mean that we don't need money. We need more funding for IKS in the different areas. Thank you very much.
I'll allow my honorable members to voice their opinion or to ventilate their heat.
Yeah, Chair, thanks very much. I must say, it's a very, very good performance, presentation. I think it's brilliant. It's a pity there's only four of us once it's left. I mean, 1% of Parliament. You should present this to the whole of Parliament, except to the country. It's brilliant, really good. Please, I'm here. Because, you know, you stopped at the beginning talking about mumbo jumbo. You wanted to dispel the illusion of mumbo jumbo. And I think you did it very, very convincingly. And extremely positive what's coming out of it. But I do have a host of questions, if you don't mind. Starting with your, I'm just going by slide order, five, slide five, where you list the three broad boxes where which you engage, you know, which is traditional medicines, the cosmetic, and the nutrient. Yeah. Now, I mean, would you not think I don't know if those are examples of the three, or those are the three, but what about the other areas that go beyond those? For example, there's African sorghum and sugar production. You know, we went to a thing in Maritzburg a couple of years ago with the, what's it, every research thing, I don't know what it's called now, and the potential of sugar production at a commercial, major commercial scale is incredible. I mean, it's much, much higher potential than commercial sugar production. Isn't that the kind of thing that you should be there as well? And also hemp. I mean, we're one of the few countries in the world that still legalizes hemp, as if people smoke hemp. They don't. They smoke cannabis, not hemp. Why on earth, you know, is that a taboo subject in this country, and it's also an indigenous product with many, many uses. So are you guys involved in that? Then I wanted to ask you, you know, you mentioned at the beginning of the consortium, use those words, the consortium. So really that sort of leads me to the question of what is the business model here? You know, you spoke about the legally established consortium that are developing these things, but what is the business model precisely, and what is the role of TIA in this? Are they part of the development of the consortium model and so on? Then again, on the medical side, I can understand one has to go through the whole sort of MCC approach, which is a painful thing and extremely time consuming and so on. On the other front, presumably, this fits into the sort of 100,000 odd products floating around the country which theoretically should be registered, but nobody registers them or tests them. It fits into that category, doesn't it? Which means basically you can do what you like. You don't require any approval of anybody, which is probably a good thing in some ways, otherwise we'll never ever get off the market at all. But is that a deliberate commercial approach adopting to run the things which require the lowest amount of bureaucracy so you can get things to market as quickly as possible? Then on, I'll remind right, writing, sorry, I have to scrap that one. You spoke about the clinical testing and the funds required. I certainly would be extremely keen to ensure that you have the funds required for that process. And if there's anything this committee, if there's anything this committee could do, obviously, to ensure that in the budget negotiations that take place, if there's any pressure this committee could place on Treasury or anybody else, I'm sure we would want to ensure that you get what's required. But my question would be, to date, has there been any kind of reticence from anybody to give you the funding required to drive the clinical testing? I mean, do you have what's required, or is the shortage of funding an impediment there? It seems to me if you don't get that right, then everything, the whole pipeline stops. So you've got to get that process running quickly. And linked to that also is that $10 million budget, you say, which has been there for the last 11 years. Could somebody speak to that? How can you have a fixed figure of $10 million on that ring-fenced, you know, the research fund, the NRF one? I can't remember which one it was. $10 million a year for the last 11 years without any increase. I don't get that at all. And then also you spoke about the Centre of Excellence to be finalised, and you mentioned five universities. I don't think I heard you say Walter Sisulu, and yet Walter Sisulu has a chair, an IKS chair. You mentioned Vendel, Mpopo, KZN, I can't remember the other two, but I don't think you said Walter Sisulu. So is that, maybe I misheard you. Then just the last thing, maybe, just get on to it quickly, is this whole sui generis thing. I really completely flabbergasted how DTI have the approach they have. I think they've been completely wrong from the beginning. And that entire process driven in the other committee was a disaster from the word go. Should be thrown out by Parliament, and as you say here, somehow they persuaded Parliament, and many persuading your party, sir, to run with it. But they should have thrown it out and started from scratch. But I'm glad at least this committee, this department, can see the errors of the other department's ways, although you're putting it very diplomatically, of course. Wouldn't dream of saying anything like that. But the question I do have then is it the intention that the sui generis legislation will replace that other stuff? Or is it going to be there just to fill in the gaps? I mean, frankly, it needs replacing. It's completely wrong, the approach they've adopted. And it's unworkable. It's not going to work. Actually, on the ground, it's going to cause major issues. And how do you remunerate communities, for example? This is one example. It's going to be something create more havoc than ever. But I just wanted to know what you're intending to do. If it's intended to replace that, which your slide 39 suggests, then I think that's the right way to go. And is that when you talk about engaging with DTI, try to reach agreement, is that the intent, to try to get something that both departments would buy into? I think that's and then lastly, yeah, the issue, you made a throwaway line at one point about involving your SADC neighbours in this process. Involving SADC neighbours. And of course, the plants are not all that at stop at Limpopo. So, what is the process in respect of protection, particularly, and commercialisation and so on? What is the process envisaged to involve our neighbouring neighbours? I would imagine we'd have a national interest in not doing so at one level, but at another level, we do have an African objective, of course, working with our neighbours. So, how do you manage those two objectives?
Thank you for the interesting presentation, which was also straightforward. But there are a few questions which you want some clarity of that. I only want to know, I don't know whether I even said properly. Now, I want to know what about people in different areas where their knowledge of medicine in their area, how do they bring it forward so that it can also be tested and be helpful even to others? How is it done? I mean, how do they bring forward their knowledge so that it can also be helpful also to other people? Because what I understand, different areas have their medicines or their knowledge, which can also be helpful even to others.
Can I ask just one more joke because of indigenous knowledge
technology transfer development and the development of the South African bioeconomy. So these are very important inputs that are being generated here. We're also very grateful always when the honourable members share their views on matters with us, as the Honourable Smith has done around the question of legislation. But I would like to point out that this is a conceptual discussion that's going on not just within the department and between the Department of Science and Technology and the Department of Trade and Industry. This is a discussion that's happening at an international level as well, at the World Intellectual Property Organization, for example, where my two colleagues are very actively involved in these discussions. So these are not trivial matters. And I know that you are not meaning to trivialize them, but the formulation of legislation around these is complex. As it always is, I'm sure, in your experience as parliamentarians, in dealing with legislation that lies at the interface between two or more different government departments and areas of formal responsibility and mandate. So the discussions that are currently going on within the Department of Science and Technology and between the Department of Science and Technology and the DTI will eventually provide a legal framework and details of legislation that will then go through the parliamentary process. I think it's perhaps too early to preempt the outcome of those discussions and particularly of the parliamentary process in determining an exact response to the question that the Honourable Member asked about will this replace or complement. I think it's too early to say that. The important point is that there's an understanding that these things need to be dealt with in a rigorous and legislated manner, and we're working very closely with all relevant stakeholders to determine exactly how to do that. And I'd like to ask my colleague now to respond to the other detailed questions.
Just before you hand over, actually, if I remember very well, there was a big resistance from trading in us to change. Mm-hmm. Have you softened them? I think that's the question that comes from the crowd.
I don't know whether I should get into that fray of the discussion about softening them, but the real discussion between the officials around those issues with the DTI officials. But we want to scale to a higher level where the DG will also be involved in it. So at the moment, is that the process has started. On the specific issues, maybe beginning with the flagships, what we have put in this slide are merely illustrative. It covers a whole range. A good example, if we look at traditional foods, we really mean all traditional foods. And in this particular case, it includes wild fruits as part of that, because people feed on that. So there's a program with the invest of vendor that is concentrating on wild fruits and looking at that. So we intend to cover all the foods. It's not new work. The Agricultural Research Council has been doing work in this area, and the sorghum case that you quoted, they've been pushing with that. So we work closely with them to push that mandate. And they have the technical expertise, and therefore would want as a program to strengthen their hand in excelling in the work in which they are doing. So we'll continue to work with them and strengthen their efforts. In terms of the work that we have been doing with in the three areas, we have taken a value chain approach in dealing with the different agencies that work with the DST. For instance, the NRF have normally tended to invest money in knowledge generation and human capital development. So, but when we see products, such as the tea project, coming out of it, then we, through their interaction, we then graduate them to
get into a bioprospecting profile, because that competence is not what they are focused on. And then we give it to the other science councils to move on with it. And at this stage, when they begin to show promise of commercialization, that's when we bring in the TIA. But internally, we bring in LIPMO. For instance, on this scheme, even that we talked about, we've met with the Investor of Pretoria, the Council for Industrial Research, and LIPMO and TIA together. Say, wherein does your mandate begin, and where does TIA also begin? So we have fortunately managed to mobilize all of them to work around this. And I think the model that will come is, we don't really say we have a predetermined model. We want to develop a model together, which could then be relevant for the country. So that has covered quite a number of those issues that you have raised in terms of how we relate to others. We are very happy to get the support that this committee can give on the clinical trials. Definitely we need to scale up. If we don't do the clinical trials, we can't become global drug busters. They remain local. So in order for us to compete at that level, we definitely need this support. In the last 2 years, this support has increased, but it is also still limited. The program too, with the health innovations and health biotech, have been working with us to put in a little more money in these research activities. So we have mobilized all that we can within the department. It requires an increased budget to roll out this particular work. And so I think that we've tried before in terms of the budget options. We will try that route of the budget options, but we needed to prove the facts or put them on the table, demonstrate that we are succeeding, and then go for the budget option. And I think we're getting ready to move towards making a case for a specialized funding on this. Sorry?
When are you expecting to start on the clinical trial? Because if you want Parliament to take care of health, it must be tied up in good time, so that we will need to be times of the budget and GPS, or if it is for something next year, then in the budget goes off next year, whatever. So you have to tell us in good time. But you must have a complete information for us to be able to answer this point.
I think that we will receive advice from within the GST, because as much as this information, we need to put the profile together. Some work has already started on clinical trials. There's one with the University of Western Cape, and on HIV/AIDS, which has started, but it will require continuous rolling out. But we take your point. I think that we will need to look at the cycle. In this particular one, which we are entering, it's a bit late because it's between now and August. So we'll also argue that probably we need to make the case stronger. So in the next cycle, coming together with the bioeconomy, we'll push it together in that package.
Thank you, Chair and Anna. Just have to make the observation as the Chair and honourable members that these sorts of this stepping up of the testing of drugs, the proof, as it were, of the drugs, it's a considerable effort, requires considerable effort, considerable investment. And these sorts of things are normally done through quite extensive partnerships between the institutions or organizations that have been involved in the initial development of these drugs. And then there's all kinds of partners that come into it. They can be from the public sector, but they usually also are from the private sector. And often there are big international donors involved, like the Gates Foundation nowadays as well. I think it's a bit too premature to be providing details of exactly how this particular one would be progressed within that framework.
but we certainly are very grateful to you for your interest in this and for your expression of willingness to assist. I think we would need to take guidance on this also from the Minister, exactly on the nature of the support that you would wish to seek from government broadly, including parliamentary support around this.
There was two, three more questions that needed to be addressed. On the consortium side of it, it's taken us quite a while to think about what's the best way of mobilizing the private sector, the science councils, the academia, and also the knowledge holders together. So this is probably what has emerged, is that to avoid competition and duplication of work, we need to bring all of them together and then identify the different competences within the stakeholders. For example, the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research can do through the biosciences is not the same as what the Medical Research Council or the Agriculture. So we will then use that and say we are a team, we are one team, and let's then give us the different competencies. So within the consortia, it's a legal agreement on how we'll manage the work that comes through, how we'll manage the funding so that we're not competing for the same resources, but also how do we manage the arising intellectual property rights from the process. And so we've then formed that as a kind of change, but with regulations on how we work.
Just follow up. So it doesn't mean necessarily, this is more the pre-commercialization stage.
Yeah.
Beginning. So the actual entity that might take it to market would not necessarily be the consortium.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
Okay, gotcha.
That is left to the different entities that are involved in it. Then the other question that probably needed to address is what is it that we're doing at the regional level, and how do we envisage to get around it? We've had four regional workshops biannually within the SADC region. So it started out as a policy workshop. How do we coordinate policies within the region? And in the last 2 years, we're now beginning a specific project. One of them is the National Record of System. How do we, South Africa has invested in this very technical system, and there's probably need to share it with the rest of the continent. So that's one area in which we've been looking at it. Would the metadata speak to theirs? Would their requirements meet that? So the Meraka Institute that have been developing, I've also had some discussion with our neighboring countries around that. Then there is the legislation. The same issues that are being discussed in South Africa are also being discussed within the region. How do we, with as neighbors, when we share the devil's claw with Namibia or Woodia with Namibia, how do we manage those kinds of rights with our neighbors? So we've opened up that discussion at intergovernmental level so that we can find ways in which we can look at that. Ideally, one would want to, not to claim too much for South African, but with the leadership that is emerging in South Africa around indigenous knowledge is leveraged by other countries. They learn from what we're doing, and so we hope that we'll continue to provide that support. We've had people come from Uganda, Tanzania, Ghana, and talking about this. Now it's even the AU, through the Pan-African Intellectual Property Organization, they've also been engaging with us around it. So we will carry it forward through the bilateral, through ICR, our international relations. It has also been adopted as a key element of the SADC ministers of Science and Technology Ministerial Committee. So IKS is an item on the agenda. So, and also the India, Brazil, South Africa, so it's an agenda. So there are multilateral and bilateral protocols that we will take through. Every agreement that probably Dr. Thomas Ufterheide presided over
in his previous portfolio as an IKS component into it. So we're really using those instruments to strengthen that aspect. Then probably the last question on the generic, before I go to the chair's question, is how do we bring forward the knowledge of other communities in this? This is, has been a big challenge for us. So one route has been to establish a national record of system. And the idea is that every province will have an indigenous knowledge documentation center where teams will be sent into the countryside, other people will come to the areas and record their knowledge, and they will be acknowledged. They will have a registration number of that knowledge, where it sits in the system. They can access it anytime. And if researchers internationally find it to be useful, then they will go through the main office and will enable them to get agreements between them. So this is why the national record of system is being put in place. So far, by the end of this year, we will have covered KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, Northwest, Gauteng, and Free State. So we have started some work in those areas in terms of the collection. There is another element, what I briefly spoke about as the accreditation and certification of knowledge holders. We are hoping that they could then establish communities of practice amongst themselves. For instance, farmers, indigenous farmers, can constitute themselves as a community of practice. Then we can interact with them within the consortia as to find out what is it that they think is important to be researched. There is also a third element. Dr. Kaniki and the NRF also carry out a national priorities for IKS. What are the priority research areas for IKS? And that also involves communities. They invite people to this discussion so that the research agenda that we're involved in, whether it's in about prospecting or other areas, there is a participation of communities in here. So we are trying to do that. And then the IKS Expos, we've had four of them in Pretoria, in Limpopo, KZN, and the last one was in Mafikeng. And the knowledge holders come in numbers. And so we circulate the information, we interact with them, and it's a five-day affair, Monday to Friday. The last one in Mafikeng, Radio Musweding was there for all the 5 years, for 5 days, and from morning until dawn, broadcasting from where the IKS Expo was being. So the message is going wide. Probably we covered more than 1.5 million people through that activity. So there is effort that we are putting in to make it popular. The chair has had very difficult questions. That's because he's been here very long. So he has an elephant memory around the issues. On the diabetes, the issue, probably some of the challenges which you also know about is that the change is not just in the community, it's also in the researchers. Once you lose the researchers and they leave the system, the projects also come to an end, and hence the consortium approach, so that the research agenda is not managed by individuals, but rather by the consortia. And definitely we have lost some of the people from the system, and hence this discontinuity. But we have found a solution to that. The
of retaining people once they start the consortium,
for example, chair, if a person resigns from the University of KwaZulu-Natal, does not mean that the research on diabetes comes to an end. We distribute that to others within the consortium. So the work is a priority and continues to be funded and supported, and other people take it up. We didn't have a consortium. And probably the water system chair and the BIKS, the two questions that we need to probably. The water system chair is a new chair.
really has emerged after the process of establishing an IKA Center of Excellence had started. However, they've already been pushing their own boundaries to see how they can take the Bachelor of Indigenous Knowledge Systems and be part of it. And maybe in that extent, Chair, you'll be surprised the growth that has happened in that chair at Water Sisulu in the last 6 months. They are actually used a think tank approach, brought in other people from other institutions, helped them to think through their research agenda and work. So I am satisfied that the progress that's been made at Water Sisulu is that which aligns itself with the mandate that we've given them.
And the consequences which we observe all together with you for the Islamic Republic. So that's how I get to check if you did follow the process for the Islamic attack program. It's good to say that the Islamic Republic is a
No, exciting work is coming out of it. There is the Ezeko Institute, which they have established as part of that. That has brought in Professor Chiliza from Botswana, Professor Kaya, and Professor Nela Kaleni. They've all been working around assisting the chair to come up with a knowledge agenda.
Chair?
Have you finished?
Yes, Chair, I think I've covered the question.
Let's sort of follow up on something very quickly. Yeah, that was great. So, as I understand, you get a consortium per product, as it were. Not necessarily. It could be a consortium could deal with a number of products. Oh, okay. Now, then, when it goes to market, is the idea that you would get a single business entity, whatever format it takes, dealing with the commercialization of a single product, or again, with a suite of products? How is that anticipated? And then, secondly, the clinical trials you're referring to are presumably through, for our own internal MCC processes. But what would be the requirements, say, for to go global? You've got FDA and all other sort of things. Would you leave that to the commercial entity to take over from your initial process and drive the cost and the process of that, or would it be part of this initial clinical trials to try and fit into a global set of standards that it's a short visit?
Maybe there are a couple of quick responses. The model for commercialization will be probably the one which will be very creative and innovative according to the different products. Let me take the example of rooibos. Of much interest is a global player, Nestle. So the kinds of processes that you put in terms of the research work is different. They already have global markets. So once that product gets the acceptance in terms of that, then they mainstream it within that global product system.
Yeah.
But it might also be the DST working, or South Africa working with Switzerland, establishing a pharmaceutical industry. And that could also be another channel through which products can be channeled. But there are also knowledge holders, such as the one on the scheme Evena. The community in the Mamelodi is interested in setting up their own company in terms of the growing and the initial processing. But we have also looked at the South African context. So South African companies, small as they may be, have been putting together to look at the possibility of taking this product into the market. So there will be quite a lot of permutations depending on the circumstances that are involved within this. And I think we should leave it, we should leave that creativity
sure.
So that the big players can come in and so the small players can also be in this particular activity. Thank you, Chair.
Well, I've got just a few additional also follow-ups. In terms of startup collaboration, we have, I know there's a professor in Namibia, Professor Sheikh, I'm sure you know him,
He's also a very, I think he's the chairman of UNDP in Africa. He's a microbiologist by profession. And he came here one time to address right, was addressing in the WSSP. I attended his sessions in the WSSP too, where he was addressing about the world which lies in the African continent, especially so-called weeds, useless weeds, like many African communities along the Nile. They clear using all types of clearance tools, including what we call the spray,
herbicide.
Yeah. So you are saying that in fact that we it's been many billion profit in countries like China, but in Africa we are killing it. We are getting it, we call it wheat. So he gave a lot of research that he has done over the African continent, where actually he was talking about even some mushrooms also, which are growing around the Nile River, and which the African communities are killing with this herbicide, which make $1 billion profit in the world. And so many other things, but just looking from the biotechnology point of view, the indigenous knowledge system, how they should be developed, because actually in countries like China, they have been really utilized into big commercial projects. But in Africa, we actually look for money to kill some of these important products. I'm just trying to say, how much are you having a regional collaboration with people like Professor Mushetti and such institutes in the region? Because Professor Mushetti is in Namibia, yeah? I think he's in the University of Namibia, but he's also a leading microbiologist and a UN chairperson in Africa. Very important person to collaborate with in terms of looking into this kind of thing. That's the first one. The second one is, again, there's been a lot of, I once invited the Opejan people here in Parliament, if you remember very well, some 24 years ago. I've never had any progress even from them until today. The only informal progress I got from Professor Kalini, Professor of Kuzi, let you know they seem separated with men for whatever reasons, which I not important to talk about here. But then he told me that they are still continuing with the research in such a final stage. He, to me, promised me that within 2 years you will have wonder how far is that.
It's not on the presentation, but it's also on issues of indigenous knowledge. When I sustained my injury, among other things that I was given, was all the indigenous mixture. But what I have observed, or the question, what I have observed is that since I have been living that, I lost weight now. How do I get in touch with you for you to just check what is in that course, why in taking that one weight? It has assisted me in healing of the union of the bones. our people that they have recommended some of these things. I don't know if the people listen, but one, a loss of weight; two, a high, very painful heartburn. Now I'm thinking about that check because I just want to have an impact on my personal capacity, but also to just have an understanding. That is why the question: how do I get hold of you when we come back to give you that substance for you to just test it under microscopic using a microscopic eye? That's
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Dundra. Just quickly to emphasise the point again that the work that Dr. Soleti was presenting here is taking place in its own context, but it is also taking place in the context of the Department's development of the bioeconomy. And we will, in due course, be briefing the committee on the new bioeconomy strategy that the department is busy developing. And this portfolio of work is a very important input into it that is also being incorporated into the document itself, into the strategy itself. So the sort of thing that you were alluding to, where there are potential opportunities in the indigenous flora of the country, that may be recognized within certain communities but not outside of those where the big commercial opportunities might exist. The whole intention is to try and ensure that this work provides that sort of input into the more commercial and high-tech development of the bioeconomy. And we're hoping that when we present this strategy to you, you will see the rationale in this regard. Just quickly on the Honourable Dundra's question, I'm not a physician, but I imagine that the trauma of your accident might have also caused slightly different changes in eating, that you didn't feel like eating certain kinds of food anymore. I don't know. It could be, so my point is simply that you could be losing weight for a range of different reasons. It might not just be this one particular matter, but I'm sure that Yona will be able to assist you with getting more information about this particular remedy that you're talking about on the Chair,
I wouldn't qualify as a Mzakat, maybe as the Yinyanga, the probably quickly, Chair, only the work that you mentioned around the experts in the region. The DST does support SunBio, which is a Southern African Biosciences Network. And it has developed across Southern Africa some IKS strains. For instance, on animals, they've given it to Zambia. On fishery, they've given it to Malawi. And then on the mushrooms, it is Namibia. So we in this country, we're going to focus, according to them, on this center of excellence. So it can produce human capital and generate knowledge. And so there is a network through which people, such as you've mentioned. We also have a professor from Namibia, Professor Mwendemere, who is the chairperson of SunBio, but also is sits on the Ministerial Advisory Committee on IKS. We also have another Ugandan who sits on the IKS Ministerial Advisory Committee. So we try to use this as our different. We can't organize activities in our neighboring country, but we can bring people to work with us, and then they take the work back to them. And that's what the model we are using in this particular work. And we will try in every way possible to use those channels through the SunBio and also through the activities of the department. The question that Honorable Ndungu has raised is this: what has excited the Nestle to work with South Africa in the wake of rooibos? A lot of people drink rooibos as rooibos, but but they have discovered that it has a cardiovascular effect. But also, they've also been looking at the issue of weight loss rising from rooibos. So they have a rich activities that they are looking at a very high and competitive science level to investigate on that. And really the approach is that for African medicine, it works differently from the other medicine, that they don't treat one, they treat the whole body. And the approach is a holistic approach. So in one medicine, it may be covering many other things. So their focus is wellness. And that's why if we look at the bird flu that we had, the medicine that has been found to be effective has been from China. When they tried to look for an active ingredient and isolated each one of the ingredients, it didn't work. It only worked when everything was put together holistically, then it had the effect. And to a large extent, that's the holistic methodology we're encouraging our scientists to follow in the investigation. So there could be some unknown condition that is coming out of that medicine. And as you say, the question is, how do you reach us? And I think that for the public, we have for these activities of public awareness, and the IKS documentation center that we put in place as a way of reaching us. But there is also a live website on NICSO, which is within the DST. There is a NICSO website that also you could get in touch with us. But since we are here, we just met Honorable Ngobo in the wheelchair, in the lift. Last time we were here at the budget speech, she said, you know, I have some friends who are working on that. So in between, we made contact with her and contact with the traditional healer. So we could use this contact as well as a way of carrying forward your work to the consortium. We can't promise that they will look at it tomorrow because they already have a list of activities that they have, but at least it will be with them to begin to look at.
Just to follow up on what you just said, that the type of effects that these traditional medicine have, they usually are not tackling one problem. They are multi faceted approach. You remember in the conference that we had in was it in Pretoria? Yeah, it was in Pretoria where there were the top professors from Western Cape who were also researching one on the traditional approach to HIV.
Yeah.
We were coming with the reverse side of which they said the from 20 to almost a quarter of 7 years.
Yeah.
Remember, the professor said that when he looked into one of those medicines that they used, he found that he had a combination of 8 different compounds, which when he used them separately, they didn't really work, but when they were used together in the form of that medicine, it was working, which is what you said he was researching now for. Yeah. So the approach is that indeed there must be this integration of these different compounds together to make effect to a certain treatment, probably, which is the secret of the IKS approach. I always make a good example when I promote the IKS. Remember that before modern medicine, including the Indians, but even animals, you know, the dogs, when they are ill, they go into the felt and then choose some special grass, and then they are killed. And that is indigenous because nobody has taught the dog the medicine and how it identifies the type of grass. I don't know. I'm not a number of them at home when they are sick, they go and pick up some grass and they eat the grass and they are fine. So these are type of things that are still a mystery. Maybe I mean, FKA will be able to tell us how this has come about. Okay, no, thank you very much. I just wanted, but I didn't hear you saying anything about my one of my questions about but also there was another one about what you said in the Northwest conference about IKS and basic education. How far have you promoted that type of recommendation?
Chair, we have an interdepartmental committee which brings 14 government departments together. Interesting, even SARS and the police are part of that. So this issue has been raised at that committee with our colleagues at Basic Education. So they have taken it up. We'll have to hear from them because it is their area of competence. They need to advise us how we go forward with that. But it has been raised at the Interdepartmental Committee and they will take it up on that forum.
Thank you very much. I think in the absence of any further question, I would like on behalf of the committee to thank you for this presentation and I hope you will always be following some of the things because it's no use that we have some 5 or 6 years ago people coming here saying that we are in the process of doing this when they leave the work and everything will disappear. I hope that your new strategy, which I do not know why it is anything started now, because the other programs will come after you, they will say, well, you have come with another new strategy, that one was not working, he didn't tell us about it, so, well, so and then we keep on continuing with it, destroying the research programs, which do not lead us to anywhere. So I think in future we will have to have institutional memories, so that the things that we start, that's why we don't have investors, because the investors want to see the progress of results. If there are no, there's no progress in the results, investors then get less interested about the project. So we need to find a way that the continuity in the work of the department doing these people are left because the mobility of brain is something that you can't hold on with in any constellation. It is also very useful. To be mobile in order to make an impact elsewhere, which may indirectly outpace give some benefits to society. But I think we must try and find a way of keeping the institutional memory in the institutions that we work in. Thank you very much for coming here. I hope that you will not have the challenges that.